The Israel Report with Rolene Marks for the latest information and the stories behind the news.
Rolene Marks, how are you?
Oh, Nikki.
I thought you'd like that.
My heart actually just melted.
You're so easy that way, Rolene.
I tell you, I love our listeners.
Me too.
I mean, even the ones that drive me mashuga.
And give us a hard time.
There is no love quite like the love you get from your listeners all over, dare I say, high radio land.
Absolutely right. Absolutely, absolutely. No love on the Temple Mount, I believe, though, Rolene. Where are we? What is going on there?
Oh, gosh, it's still a very, very tense situation here in Israel. As you all know, the cameras have come down, the metal detectors have been removed, and now Mahmoud Abbas is calling for, or he's threatening that security, his cooperation with Israel will end. And because many in the Palestinian world see the removal of metal detectors as some kind of victory, we now have Hamas declaring a victory and calling for a new day of rage. And we have Fatah saying,
why would we have a day of rage if we've been successful?
Well, I think we need to look at the facts on the ground as they are. We know that this has got absolutely nothing to do with metal detectors or security apparatus of any kind. This has everything to do with the fact that incitement has resulted in violent acts against Jews and Druze, or anybody who represents Israel, the state of Israel, and her institutions like the police, as we saw with the two Druze policemen that were killed. And I think that this is highly exploitive of both Hamas and Fatah, of a very, very tense situation, to make it even more tense. And it just it brings to the fore exactly what we're talking about.
Self-serving is what it's all about, really.
It's about incitement. It's about hatred. It's about the fact that they have gotten away with committing violent actions by using the name Al-Aqsa. Now, to me, and maybe there are some out there that disagree with me, the fact that weapons were brought onto this holy site, the Temple Mount, which is holy to both Muslims and to Jews, to me, that is a desecration of a holy site. The fact that there was a murder or two murders committed on the Temple Mount, that is a desecration of the holy site. The fact that the Al-Aqsa Mosque, which is a holy site, is being used to incite violence, that, to me, is a desecration of a holy site.
I thought, according to strict Muslim law, you are not allowed to bring weapons onto a holy site. My understanding was that there was a standoff some years ago within Saudi Arabia, where the government couldn't storm the area because there could be no violence and no weapons on the area. So I just can't really understand how religious belief systems change from area to area, just as there can be a metal detector in Saudi Arabia, you know, at Mecca, but not one acceptable on the Temple Mount. The whole thing is very, very, very confusing. But Rolene, to me, the biggest issue, and it's one that I spoke to David Effian from the Elgamine about earlier, was the fact that that the terrorist who murdered the family whilst they ate their Shabbat dinner is receiving $3,000 a month from the Palestinian Authority as a reward for his heinous act. That really is what this is all about. That is the crux of it, isn't it?
Well, it's absolutely that, and the incitement that leads to it. And I know we always say incitement, 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 but it goes back to the absolute crux of the matter, that it is hypocrisy, and it is about incitement, and it is about the flagrant hatred that just streams through the area. Now, if you think about that in South African terms, a salary of over $3,000, you can do the maths and see how much that equates to in South African rand. That is a substantial salary. So that is
you
how much.
You can even pay Jewish private day schools with that. More or less.
Exactly. You can. It's absolutely horrendous. Which is why there is a lot of pressure that Israel and various NGOs are putting on global governments to put to stop the allowing for the funding of terrorists. Because, you know, why should they stop? They're taught to hate. And they get paid a handsome packet for their efforts.
But what does the so-called the BDSs, what do they say about the fact that there is this economy in terror, that it pays to murder?
I don't know about you, but I heard crickets chirping when it came to asking these so-called self-proclaimed human rights activists about the industry of terror and the fact that it's paid. Again, it's a double standard that is employed. The fact that the terror is committed against Israelis seems to be okay with them.
Yeah.
They don't see issues like incitement of hatred as child abuse, because that's what we see Palestinian children taught in schools. They don't see it as child abuse. They don't see the fact that as human rights activists, they seem to have, and I use that term very loosely and extremely sarcastically, they seem to have lost the fact that as Jews, we are also human beings and our lives should matter as well. You know, I feel a hashtag coming on here, Howard.
Yeah, Jewish lives matter. Absolutely, yeah. Right. It's an
Jewish
absurdity.
And Jewish.
100%. 100%. There's Trump and Lebanese Prime Minister have met, and they've addressed the Hezbollah issue.
Yes, well, President Trump has said in no uncertain terms to Prime Minister Hariri, who's the Lebanese president, who is visiting the U.S., he has said that Hezbollah is a menace to the Lebanese state, the Lebanese people, and the entire region. And he says he is not going to let Assad get away with horrible crimes against humanity. And he says that the Hezbollah continue to increase their military arsenal and threatens to start yet another conflict with Israel, and that Hezbollah enjoys the support of Iran, and they are also fueling the humanitarian catastrophe in Syria. So kol hakavod to President Trump for understanding the situation on the ground as it is. And I know, you know, we have heard from a lot of Lebanese who have said that Hezbollah are a problem for the country, and in particular for Lebanese Christians. And Trump and Hariri then pledged solidarity with each other in their joint fight against terrorism, against not just Hezbollah, but also the Islamic State.
Absolutely amazing what is going on. The way the fluidity of the situation in the Middle East is really almost incomprehensible. It's virtually impossible to really grasp it, because within a moment it's changed again. And what I do find interesting is with this whole Trump announcement, and that is what we'd expect to hear from him, he still has been silent on the fact that the Palestinian Authority, are paying the terrorists for the murder of Jews. He was very vocal when he met with Abbas, but there doesn't seem to be any comment coming out of him at this time.
Well, look, we don't know what's going on behind the scenes.
Fair comment.
Absolutely. With recent meetings with Greenblatt, and Kushner, with Netanyahu and with Abbas, details haven't been released or made public to the media or to the public, just exactly what they discussed. So I wonder if that is not condition of any kind of negotiation that is happening between Trump, the Palestinian Authority, and Israel, and that the two shuttle diplomats who are flying between all these kinds of venues. We know that Greenblatt was in Israel and was in Amman in Jordan earlier this week to try and dilute the tensions between Israel and Jordan because of the issue surrounding the Israeli embassy in Amman, where Israeli prison guard killed his attacker and was subsequently called for detainment by the Jordanian authorities, which violated his rights to enjoy diplomatic immunity. And we know that we potentially could have had a massive crisis on our hands with our Jordanian neighbors, not that it is in their best interest. And I think also what we forget, you know, we look at Israel from a different perspective. And we like to think Israel is a regional superpower. And very frighteningly so, weeks like this week have reminded us exactly who we are surrounded by and what their intentions are.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely right. There's been quite a few interviews that we're starting to see with ISIS captives or former ISIS captives. The one that I wanted to chat to you about is one of the captives made a statement saying Israel is a beacon of hope for Yazidis. I thought that was quite interesting.
It is very interesting, and it's a story that I really would encourage people to Google and find out more about. Just a second. Nadia Murad is a Yazidi, and she was captured by ISIS, and she was used as a sex slave. She was sold to the terrorist group along with thousands of Yazidi women and girls, and she managed to escape. She was freed, and she is now telling the story about what happens to women in captivity with the Islamic State. And if you're familiar with the stories of the Yazidis, we know that they are a minority group that lived in Iraq, lived in the areas that the Islamic State have kind of just come into and disrupted. And those who weren't deemed suitable to become sex slaves were killed, including her mother and her aunts. And she's been in Israel. In fact, she addressed the Knesset yesterday. So she's been in Israel on a 5-day visit organized by IsraAid, who's the humanitarian organization. And we are very, very familiar with IsraAid because we see the tremendous work that they are doing, not just in Syria, but also with the Yazidi people, and also when we have natural disasters around the world, they're one of the first to respond. And she addressed the Knesset, and she actually said something very, very important. Apart from saying that Israel is a beacon of hope to the Yazidis, she implored the Knesset to recognize the Yazidi genocide. And I think next week a proposed bill will be discussed and voted on in Knesset to recognize the Yazidi genocide. She says because we share a history of genocide, and she says Israel stands as a beacon of hope because it shows that after such a tremendous insurmountable tragedy, you can rebuild community and country.
Again, what is so interesting to me here is you wouldn't think that the Israeli Knesset would be her focus. You'd think she'd be going to the United Nations Human Rights Council because that's who should be recognizing it as a genocide. But it is so warped and so backward that she's actually gone to the very people that the Human Rights Council accuse of all these horror crimes and asking them to recognize the Yazidi tragedy as a genocide. I feel so often like we are just living in a world that is unable to see truth from fiction. And
I think George Orwell could have written 2016,
absolutely,
2017.
Absolutely right. We really are, and you and I often say that in preparation for the show that's just the Orwellian universe that we're living in. It is so absurd that it really does defy belief. And what I find tremendously upsetting about many of these stories, particularly with the women slave trade that should never exist, never have existed, let alone exist in 2017, is you're not seeing it much on mainstream media. You really are only finding it on the alternatives. Every now and then you'll see a BBC or everything, you know, what I feel is tokenism in dealing and talking about this horror. It's just not, there should be a major outcry. Every single one of us should be horrified, outraged, motivated to deal with this, and yet somehow it again just seems to exist, and it's one of those things we almost accept is happening on the side, but we don't want to engage too much in it.
Well, you know, again, it reminds me, I have deja vu, or in this case, a real deja vu. Mm. It reminds me of the Darfur genocide, where the Jewish community, the global Jewish community, and some celebrities, and here I have to credit George Clooney and Bono, really were the ones speaking for the Darfurians.
Absolutely.
Where were these massive human rights organizations when the Janjaweed militia swooped into Darfur, raped and murdered the Darfurians, committing a tremendous genocide? Where was the world? You know, the same as we've said, where was the world with Rwanda?
Mm-hmm.
Nearly 80 years after the Shoah, it seems that the world did not learn any kind of lesson, and that is frightening.
Absolutely right. And on that unfortunately unpositive note, we are going to have to leave it. It is 5:27. Rolene Marks, that's it for us today. We look forward to chatting to you tomorrow. Please make sure to have a whiskey in hand, because it just makes life so much easier.
Oh, I tell you, after this week, never mind a whiskey. I think bring the bottle.
Absolutely, get rid of those glasses. And at 5:27, that was Rolene Marks with the Israel Report, brought to you by the Blue Agency.